right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is our second year of announcing our results as a producing company. And thank you all very much for joining us in the room and those on the telephone. I'll start with, obviously, the obligatory disclaimer, and then into the results. I'll stand to one side so you can all see. We're announcing today a 5p final dividend. That takes our dividend for the year for 2013 to 9p. We're returning to shareholders $12.6 million. Now, bear in mind that the mine has only just been operating two years as we come up now. So in that time, we've returned over $28 million to shareholders with this final dividend. That's on the back of a strong production performance last year. We produced over 10,500 tons of copper. We actually sold just under 10,700 tons. So that gave the revenue for the project of about $76 million. Attributable to us, because as you'll be aware, we operated much of the year on a joint venture basis, we've turned in $54 million group revenue. And that translates to an EBITDA of 32%. Now, that is over 100% up on last year's EBITDA. And that goes along with the gross revenue, which is 76% up on the previous year. So you can see a real step change for the company in its first full year of operation. In doing that, we've achieved cash costs of 73 cents a pound. Last year, it was 71 cents. So pretty much stable. In spite of a rising cost environment, both in terms of labor and reagents and other items that we use, and power as well. We've done all this with very much a health and safety hat on. Corporate and social responsibility is very much the watchword these days for our industry. And we're very pleased to say that we've had no lost time injuries in the last year of production on site. In fact, we've worked over 418,000 man hours in the last year. And you'll see figures later on. Since we started construction on site, we've had 1.6 man hours of work with no lost time injuries. So, a safe environment, a producing environment, producing better than our guidance last year. Our cash at the end of the year last year was just over $44 million. Last year, in total, I think we paid out about $19 million, which was the dividend for 2012 and the interim for 2013. So $19.7 million was actually paid out in cash last year. As I said, our dividend, final dividend for this year is 5p. And during the course of the year, we put all our resources onto a JORC-compliant basis. And we also acquired a bit of an opportunity with Copper Bay, a private company that has an asset access to a potential copper project in Chile. So we've looked outside of the political area that we currently operate within into South America. So our production for the first quarter of this year was again up nearly 14% on the same period last year. So we've maintained that production profile that we've demonstrated by the final figures last year, 5% up on our target. And already in Q1, we're up 13% to $1,900. The video just showing you the dumps didn't stop quite where we expected to stop. But this just shows you, for those who've not been out on site, the vast area that we have access to. And finally, for those on the telephone, I apologize for you not seeing the video, but you can see the size of the open pit. That's the project that dumped waste on surface that we're now currently recovering copper from. Any CEO producing good results, I would imagine, like us, would always point analysts to our share price performance graph. And you can see right back from the start of operations, which was in April, May of 2012, on the extreme left-hand side of slide 7, the share price performance, in spite of a market that we've seen a lot of volatility, we've managed to maintain a steady and progressive rise to our current share price at closing yesterday was about £1.73. And you must remember, when we listed in late 2010, we were listed at 96p. So comparison against peers and some of the market indices in terms of FTSE AIM 100 and the UK mining indices, you can see that CAML has outperformed all of those indices and many of our contemporaries in this small copper space on AIM. And so as it closed yesterday, our market capitalization was close to £150 million. We still have $44.5 million in the bank. We don't have an awful lot of shares out. We have about 85 million out. Nigel will come on to and explain the Kunlad transaction, whereby we are acquiring the other 40% of the asset we don't currently own and how that will translate into shares. With that, I'll hand over to Nigel for the financial review.
Okay. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll stand up as well. I am standing up. I suppose you'd expect the finance director to start on a financial review by a slide which showed the numbers, but I think at CAML we like to do things slightly unconventionally, and what I'd like to actually start off with is talking through the Kunlad transaction, as it's affectionately known within our company. Just to remind those who don't know, the Kunlad transaction is effectively the transaction that will take us to 100% ownership of the Kunlad project. We have historically owned it on a 60-40 joint venture. And the reason I've decided to start off on the finance review with this is because it is absolutely fundamental to understanding the results of the year. We have a number of issues and impacts, if you like, in completing the transaction, which have affected the 2013 results, which are exceptional to the year. You do need to strip those out to get a feel for the underlying earnings and the underlying performance of the business. But just to major on this for the moment, the good news I can say is that we are, as a management team, extremely confident that we will complete this transaction by the end of June 2014. We put an announcement out just before the end of March, which effectively extended the long stop date. Now, people will be sceptical about that, and cynical maybe, but we have got, you know, reliable information from within country that the processes involved, and they are fairly opaque processes that we have no influence over whatsoever, we are confident we'll complete that transaction by the end of June. However, how did it affect the results for last year? Well, the transaction has been going on for more or less the period that the results, this morning's results cover. From the 1st of January 2012 is when we started this process, and the results cover the two-year period effectively, 2013 and 2012. No real impact in 2012, lots of delays. We basically accounted for a joint venture on a 60-40 basis. During 2013, on the 21st of October, that's the key date, I guess, we actually acquired the legal ownership of the other 40% of Kunlad Copper Company that we didn't own. Now, the key thing on that is that Kunlad Copper Company is effectively the revenue generator for the business. That's the company that produces the cathode copper, generates the revenues, and effectively runs the cash flows of the business. The other entity, the SUC, or Surrey Kasna, which is the entity that owns the licenses that we operate from on the dumps and does the leaching processes, there's no real impact of the accounting for that because that is still 60-40 owned, and that will only complete when we complete the whole transaction. That's what's been the time-consuming element of the transaction. So the impact on the accounts is effectively, and this is quite a complicated accounting impact with PwC that we went through, that we had to account for it as a business combination. And what that effectively means is that in bringing the other 40% of the project or the company that we didn't own onto the balance sheet and into the income statement, we had to recognise the 40% of assets, and there was what's known as a fair value uplift. So you have to value those assets at the time of completion. Now, we effectively took that as the 30th of September as the date of completion. So we had the exchange rate, we had the value of the shares, and clearly those who've read about the transaction know the quantum of shares that we've agreed as a consideration for that. And that effectively set the value for that 40% of the business. And you roll that through into accounting terms, 40% you bring on, as you can see the numbers there, we recognise those assets at £21.8 million in the balance sheet. The value for those assets was effectively the 15.4 million shares we'd agreed with Kinnes Rakishev to pay for those, plus the accrued dividends that we'd also agreed as part of the deal that he would receive because of the delays in getting the paperwork done. So that came to £40.4 million as the value. The difference between those two numbers, as you can see, 40.4 minus 21.8, led to a fair value uplift in the balance sheet for the assets we brought on board into our ownership. The other implication is the other 60% then needs to be remeasured on the same basis as that. And what that therefore leads to is another gain, but that gain hits the income statement. So that's the fair value uplift of 27.8 million that you'll see going through the income statement. Final piece of the equation, a little bit complicated, a little bit of accountancy wizardry, to be honest with you, is you end up with a deferred tax liability. And the implication for that is that you end up with a goodwill value on the balance sheet as well. And that was about 9.3 million. That 9.3 million is effectively 20% of the combination of the 27 plus the 18, the uplift.
Okay.
Yeah, just move on. So that effectively is the Trunet transaction. What about the numbers then? The numbers are good numbers, even stripping out those exceptionals. And there are a couple of exceptionals which I'll just touch on. But revenue was up 76%, 54.1 million of gross revenue. Just to remind you again, gross revenue, we also, you'll see in the numbers, the net revenue number that you'll see. We effectively sell our copper on site at LME prices times the quantity we sell it at. But we pay Traxys, who do the offtake, effectively a $350 per tonne fixed fee for every tonne that they deliver for us. So that's the difference between gross revenue and net revenue. The gross revenue and the key number for the dividend is the gross revenue. Gross revenue is effectively attributable revenue for CAML, and that's what drives our dividend policy. That was 54.1 million, up 76%. Operating profit, up 86%. And then you got the impact of the two exceptional items. The gain on the acquisition, 27.8. You also remember from the interims we decided to write down all our assets in Mongolia, and that was a full year loss on those assets of 14.1 million. So effectively a net gain of 13.7 million through the P&L. And the bottom line CAML Group profit, as you can see there, is up by 252%. So 34.5 million, up from almost 10 million last year. Now, if you strip those exceptional items, you can get a feel for the underlying earnings. But in a couple of minutes, I'll just touch on the project, and that gives you a better feel for underlying earnings than some of the statutory numbers that we've reported today. Last number to touch on there, earnings per share, up to 38.9 cents per share, which more than covers the dividend that we're announcing this morning. Just quickly deal with this, because this is the end of the statutory numbers really to talk about. Obviously, what I've talked about so far has a big impact on the balance sheet as well. As you can see there, our balance sheet numbers at total asset level has gone up by almost 70 million. Most of that is a fair value uplift on the assets. There are a couple of other things in there. Intangibles, we purchased Copper Bay, as Nick will come on to talk about later, for $3.2 million, a 50% stake in that company. That's gone under intangibles. We didn't account for that as a business combination because effectively at the moment it isn't a business combination. It's really a licensing buy and the ability to develop that particular asset. Cash at bank, strong number there, 44.5 million. Up 11 million on the year. We still have no outstanding debt. And the equity, not a lot to talk about. But effectively, one thing which we did do during the year is a capital reduction scheme to effectively enable us to be able to carry on paying dividends. So we transferred 61 million from the share premium account. And the final thing, I guess, really, and this wasn't really an effect in 2013, but it was an effect post the balance sheet, which was the tenge devalued by 20% overnight. So you know, many people by surprise, I think it's fair to say, ourselves included. The impact of that was that a lot of people suffered, the working people suffered effectively, and a lot of the major and responsible employees in the country did decide to pay their staff a pay rise. And we effectively enhanced our staff's pay by 10% and backdated it to the 1st of February. I think it was very well received by the staff. It was probably slightly better than some of the other employees in the country, and we were pleased and happy to do that. We still effectively end up with a net benefit of 10% on our cost base in the area, so that's positive for us still. And the only final other thing to say is you will see this year, in this year's results, there will be an impact on the asset base because of devaluation. We expect that our assets effectively are about 60% of the tenge denominated on that balance sheet and on the cost base as well about that number. Let's move on. So how did the actual project itself perform? And this is where you get a better feel for underlying earnings for the company. 8 months production in 2012, 12 months in 2013. You can see the the increase in volume of copper that was sold, up by 67% to 10,689 tonnes, most of it through Traxys. We did suffer, like most copper producing companies, a reduction in the unit price that we achieved. That was down by 11% from about $8,000 per tonne to closer to $7,000 per tonne. And project revenue has already been mentioned, up by almost 50% at $76 million. One of the key numbers there, and which gives a feel for underlying earnings, is EBITDA, up by 51% to $48.1 million. The one big increase we did, and it's not really the cost base as such, but it affects the unit cost, if you take a fully absorbed unit cost, is the depreciation. Last year, we only charged half a year's worth of depreciation. Because we only effectively commissioned the plant halfway through the year. So that was only $1.6 million charge, whereas this year we got a full charge of $4 million, and we got an uplift from the assets now being at a higher value, leads to a higher depreciation charge. So that's $5.7 million that goes through those costs. So as you can see, they're good results for the project. They show the increase in growth, and they show an element of the increase in ownership as well. And you know, they're good results that we're pleased with. How does that affect our unit costs? Well, Nick's already mentioned this, really. We have managed to keep our unit costs at the C1 level more or less stable. We've gone up about 2%, I think it is. Swings of some price increases, a bit of labour increase, some increase on the power. But overall, on the reagents, it's been very positive. Better consumption of reagents and also lower prices in some areas. So it's a mix of things, as maybe you'd expect. But to keep it within 2% increase against a backdrop of about 8% inflation is very good indeed. Depicted on the pie chart, the right-hand side of it, the three portions there, copper cathode, MET, and sales and distribution, make up the 73 cents per pound. And on the left-hand side, you can see the other costs involved in the business. And what we have started to report more visibly, I guess it's fair to say, you could always work it out, is what's a fully absorbed cost. We've only got one project, so I think it's a fair argument to say, what are the total costs of the business against the production of copper? And that's at $143 per pound. I'd say it's still within the lower half of the copper, the cash cost curve. So that's positive, and that's actually down from last year, you know, and you would probably expect it to be slightly down given the higher volume of output. And finally, what have we done with the cash we've generated and the money we've earned from the project? The cash flow chart on the right-hand side, you can see there, we started at $34 million at the beginning of the year. We generated $41 million, and then we've spent it on various things in terms of capex on the plant, Copper Bay acquisition, elements of taxation kicking in. And the big number there is the 19.7, as Nick's already mentioned. We've given back almost $20 million last year, and that's made up of 2012 special, 2012 annual dividend of 7 pence, and the 4 pence interim for 2013, and we're proposing a 5 pence for the full year. That will make $26.6 million given back to shareholders since the IPO. And if you take into account the $2 million of buyback that we did in 2012, that's 28.6, so almost half of the money raised at IPO has been given back to the shelves, which I think is a really good number to keep in mind. Just a final thing on the paybacks. Those numbers, you know, it is a bit of a confusing picture. The shares haven't been issued to Kinetic Rapid Share yet. We have accounted for, you know, the final 3 months of those shares in the earnings per share numbers. But we do effectively have an outstanding liability of $3 million, $3.1 million, as you can see there. And the reason I've put that up is because our dividend policy is based on a minimum of 20% of the attributable revenue. And the numbers we've announced this morning effectively give back 23%. But that's a bit distorted because if you throw in what we will pay to Kinetic once the deal is completed, and that will be in this quarter, it'll be closer to 29%, which is comparable with what we did in the first year, which is 30%. So I think we've kept the dividend on a similar level. We don't want to be hostage to fortune. The copper price has lots of pressure on it, as we all know. But once we've completed the transaction, there'll be a clearer picture moving forward, and we will maintain that dividend policy from Kinetic, and the base level will be 20%.
Okay. Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The focus on an operational side this year has been one of steady operations and efficient operations. The graph on the right-hand side there shows you quarter by quarter 2013 through to 2014. The nine-month period where we averaged around about 2,900 tonnes of copper per quarter, running at about a little over 900 tonnes 950 tonnes a month, which is above the plant design capacity of 830. Within that period, there were 5 months that we ran at over 1,000 tonnes a month of copper output. And overall for the year, we achieved about a 97% utilisation of our engineering assets inside the plant. You'll see there, as Nick's already mentioned, that in this first quarter of 2014, we've achieved about a 13% improvement over the same period last year. That improvement is a series of incremental management type of improvements that we've made, which I'll discuss on the next slide. The slide on the graph on the left, which you're quite familiar with, it's just there to illustrate for you the flexibility that the solvent extraction plant has between the grade of copper coming into the plant and the volume of solution that we process through the plant. And you'll see there that during summer months, where grades are a little higher, we tend to run at about 600 cubic metres an hour, 700 cubic metres an hour. Winter comes, we switch on dedicated winter blocks that are covered with HDPE that will allow us to run through the winter. They initially start leaching at a high grade and then tail away quite sharply, as you can see there. And at the end of the winter period, as we're coming out of winter, some of those solution grades are running at 1.1, 1.2 grams per litre, very low. But we can offset that fall in grade by increasing our flow rates. And you'll see there that we ran quite steadily at around about 300 cubic metres an hour, then raised it to 500 cubic metres an hour, coming out of winter, rising up to 1,000 cubic metres an hour. So very flexible plants. This is just trying to give you an illustration of the sort of incremental improvements and the reasons behind the latest Q1 performance compared to the previous. Winter in Kazakhstan this year was, oddly enough, a little colder than it was the previous year. But what, in fact, we didn't see this year was the real extremes of cold. We didn't have periods sort of minus 40, minus 42, as we did last year. So this year, even despite the higher production, it was actually overall a colder winter. The middle graph shows you the PLS flow rate there. And again, just through operational experience gained from our first winter of operation, we ran the average flow rate increase from about 390 cubic metres an hour to an average of about 515 over that same period. So, again, you can see there that that's quite a nice incremental improvement. And what that is reflected on by the graph called raffinate is that higher flow rate, three boilers running, our raffinate temperature that we put out onto the dumps to stop freezing was lowered by a couple of degrees, around to about 12. We're quite comfortable in that range. We actually planned for about 10 or 11. We'd be quite happy with that. But that just reflected the higher flow rates. You'll see there that we produced more copper, yet the PLS grade was actually lower this quarter than it was in the previous quarter. Again, offset by the higher flow rates. The SX recovery curve, that just illustrates that the operational team, now very familiar with operating this plant, very efficient, and in fact we improved our extraction recovery from incoming PLS by about 2%. The end result was that compared to 2012, average stripping of about 18.5 tonnes per day, we increased this to about 21 tonnes per day. And the reason, as you'll be aware, we're looking to increase our boiler capacity, and we're hoping that by the end of the year that 21 tonnes per day will be increased even further on top of those incremental improvements. This slide is just sort of showing you the outline of the dumps and where we're operating. The yellow area on dump 9 and 10 has been our primary focus of operations in 2013. We did actually spend a couple of months on dump 6, leaching in the lower southern area. But as winter came along in late October, November of the year, we switched to the sort of light blue blocks that you can see on dump number 7, which had been prepared and covered with HDPE, and they were the blocks of ore that we ran through the winter on. The areas that you see coloured now are going to be areas where we'll be continuing to leach through 2014, and you can see up at the top of dump number 7 that there's still four large blocks of ore that we won't be touching until 2015 at the earliest. The graph on the right is just sort of wanting to give you an illustration of how our copper recovery is performing with what we forecast it would do. And there's three complete blocks of colour there. There's the beige, the blue, and the darker light brown. The beige one is dump 9 and 10, which we've been operating since we started back in 2012. And we're now indicating that we've recovered 90% of the copper that we expected to recover from that dump. Since mid-July of 2013, that went into what we called a rest period, and actually we've now just reactivated that dump after winter, and we're already seeing additional copper coming out of that dump. So we're comfortable we're going to get the forecast copper there. On dump 6 and 7, they've only been running for short periods of time, and you can see the indicated copper recovery from each of those. The red line, that gives us the indicated total amount of copper that we recovered from dumps 9 and 10, 6 and 7. 81,000 tonnes of copper in those three dumps. We expect to get about 40,000 of it. We've already recovered about 19,000 of it, hence the 47% overall recovery. So everything's looking very much in line with our forecasts. As Nick's already mentioned, once we got the plant up and running in 2012, 2013 was a year where a very conscious decision was taken to focus on CSR type and environmental issues. On the environmental monitoring around the eastern dumps, we've got 105 boreholes, and they're actively sampled on a weekly basis. We do our own internal analyses of those so that if there's anything that looks strange, we can react to it. We also have independent external analyses of sampling and analysis done from those boreholes. During the year, we've had reviews completed by international consultants on both CSR type issues and health and safety issues. As those reports have come to us, we've implemented action plans to address any shortcomings that they may find in our operations. And finally, we've got a completely integrated environmental management system in place now. And we would say that as a small company, we're working in Kazakhstan, but the culture we've put in place amongst our employees is probably as good as any you will find in Kazakhstan. We're quite proud of it. On the social responsibility side, we appointed a full-time expatriate CSR director in May 2013, a gentleman called Nick Shirley. Nick is based out in Balkhash and oversees all of these aspects for us. 418,000 man-hours worked without a lost time injury during 2013, and 1.6 million man-hours worked since we started construction of the project. I think in anybody's books, very positive numbers and a reflection of the importance that we place on it. On the operation itself, there's about 217 employees, and over 95% of those are all recruited from Balkhash and Kounrad. We only have two expatriates out of an overall complement of 235, with the remaining few higher level managerial positions coming from places like Karaganda and Almaty. We've contributed $178,000 to local community projects, particularly focusing on schools and health during the year. And we've also established in-house a company sponsorship scheme to allow young, capable, up-and-coming talent to undertake MBAs and additional degrees, etc. So we're sponsoring that work. Engaging very much with our local, regional, and national audiences, through TV, newspapers, presentations, etc. in the country. In terms of project expansions, as you know, we've already committed to the expansion of the boiler house. We're putting in two extra boilers. It's going to cost us about $2.6 million. The equipment for the boiler house expansion will be shipped out of China at the end of this month. We've already got our construction manager and his team on site. They'll be starting to pour concrete very shortly, and we expect to be commissioning those two additional boilers in about October of this year. In terms of the expansion post-transaction, we've been looking at a whole series of different options, and those would involve a mix of an additional mixer settler to allow us to increase our flow throughput from, say, 1,000 cubic meters an hour up to 1,400 cubic meters an hour. Great advantage is that that would even allow us to take our PLS grade even lower if we needed to. Looking at putting an additional tank house with a nominal capacity of 5,000 tons a year, and we'd have to expand the electrical substation. All of them not particularly difficult things to do. In terms of exploiting the materials out of the western dumps, looking at leaching out of the west and then transferring that solution across to the existing SXEW plant, that would involve relatively simple technology of some boilers and, of course, some two fairly long pipelines, 2 kilometres. And those expansion activities would be phased over a three-year period.
Okay, so that, with my colleagues Nigel and Howard, that's the sort of the numbers that have come out of last year's performance and the operational aspects. And I'd personally like to thank them both for their support during the last year, which provided figures, which I think anybody would agree, which are fairly unique in our space, in the AIM market, paying a dividend after just over 3 years listed and 2 years in production is quite a feat. So that's allowed us to have a fairly strong balance sheet and a good cash situation in the company. So, you know, we've always keep our eyes and ears open for opportunities. And during the course of last year, this opportunity at Copper Bay came along. It's it was an opportune time for us. We've acquired 50% of Copper Bay for a $3.2 million investment, and we have an option to increase that to 75% ownership for an additional $3 million. This is an opportunity. It's a tailings treatment project. These tailings sit on the coast in northern Chile at Chañaral Bay. The tailings originated from two Chilean copper mines upriver, some 60, 70 kilometers inland. In those days, the tailings were allowed to be deposited in the river. They were transported down to the sea, and something of the order of 250 million tons of tailings were dumped in the local river system. And it's estimated from drilling and work that's been done in this area, there's about 116 million tons of tailings product on the beach and in the bay area, in the surf zone. 116 million tons, grades fairly homogenous, about 0.25% copper. Initial test work, metallurgical test study says that up to 80% may be recoverable. And so it's an opportunity to get into 290,000 tons of copper for 75%, if we choose to go that far, for $6 million, is a great entry cost. Compare and contrast that with a drilling program in an exploration target where, you know, your drilling costs and your exploration costs far exceed the costs for this. And some will say, why do this, Nick? Well, the things we always need for a project is the deposit. We need to know the grade, and we need to know that we can extract it. We have the technology to extract it. All of those things we know about for this. What we've got to find out is that can it be done profitably, and can we deal with the environmental issues, which undoubtedly sit here. But those are issues that you can resolve, but it costs money. It is for us now to find out in pre-feasibility, can we do it this year to the extent that we can take it to the next stage? So that's an opportunity cost. Where are we going? Where's the company going now? First quarter, we're already 14% up on our last year's first quarter results in terms of production, 1,900 tons. We've sold just under 1,800 tons of copper. We're in the position now that we actually forward sold a bit of that copper to the end of Q1. So actually, we've got a better price for our copper that we produced in Q1 than the current spot price would indicate. We had at the end of I can hear some noise. That's all right. We still have $44 million in the bank at the end of the year, and of course our final dividend of 5p is 90 for the year, which of today's price is about a over 5.2% yield, I think.
Yes.
Which is, you know, figures that stand by themselves. And looking forward, we've already announced our target for production for this year is 11,000 tons. Part of that is from the efficiencies that from the operation that we've gained through just operating for now nearly 2 years and the addition of the two boilers. We are looking to complete the Kounrad transaction, and I know many of our shareholders and many of you out there will say, yeah, well, Nick's been saying this for the last 18 months. Yeah, when's it going to happen? It is as close now, and Nigel and I have lived this and breathed this for 2 years or more. Believe you me, I can say no more than I am as certain as I can be in this business that we're in, that we will complete by the end of June. I can say no more than that. And except to say that every promise we have made at IPO, at during production, about targets, costs, we've met them all. Please believe us on this one. We will do this by the end of June. And that will then put us into new territory. We get access to 100% of the cash flow. We'll expand the project, and we can do that expansion, maintain our 20% minimum dividend ratio on attributable revenue, not earnings, but revenue. We will do that, maintain the dividend, pay for the expansion, and look for other opportunities because we keep our costs low and our margins at current prices are good. And then finally, that does give us scope to look at other opportunities in the copper space. I think we would agree that copper is the area that we should be in. It's been good to us, and that's what we'll be looking to do in the future. And so with that, we'll finish off, I think, a set of results that stand by the team that backed me up and our team in Kazakhstan in Kounrad. And you can't say fairer than a 5% yield for, you know, $150 million pound stock. Thank you very much. And any questions? Yes, sir.
Probably one for Howard. Is there any chance you could touch upon what impact you think the additional boiler capacity will have on Q115 production? And how far do you think beyond the 1,900 tons this quarter?
Yeah,
the question for the guys on the phone.
Can I give an indication of what additional copper we expect to achieve in Q1 2015 by the addition of the two boilers? The way we've done our calculations on this is that we believe that these boilers will allow us to produce about another 150 tons of copper per month minimum, based on an additional flow rate of around about 250 cubic meters an hour at an incremental copper grade of only 1 gram per liter. So we're fairly comfortable. It should be around about 150, 180 tons a month extra.
I think with that, I know it's down to semantics. It's not necessarily about the extra solution at the same grade as we've been processing it, but it allows us to treat a lower grade, therefore extract more copper from the dumps and make full use of the contained copper. Would that be a fair?
Yeah, and
full use. Maintain everything the same, but we're actually having the ability to take a bit more copper out.
The focus is to try and take away that dip that you always see in Q1. Try and get that column more in line with the
Just to clarify, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Howard, that's 180 tons per month in a 4 month winter period, which we effectively define December to March.
Yeah.
And only in the coldest
period. Yeah.
Would you look at kind of balancing the economic benefit of adding more boilers, or do you think it's as far as you would take it for that?
No, this would be as far as we take it for now.
Any other questions? Paul?
In regards to the same slide 19, post-transaction expansion phase over 3 years, any preliminary number of the CapEx for those
Now, the question is any preliminary CapEx numbers for the phased expansion, and I think at the moment we're not prepared to give any of those numbers, but in a short trail, once we've finished the ownership transaction, we will be coming out with those. Internally, we've got a good handle on what we think we're going to do, but we'll announce it once we've finished the ownership transaction is the answer to that.
Done any more recent met test work on the Western Dumps? No, most of it is Oceanally classified as sulfide, but your expectation has always been that it's naturally oxidized over time. Is there any more sort of recent work?
No, there's nothing nothing more than the series of column tests that we completed off last year, and they were sort of all returning in the region of 35% to 45% copper recovery.
So will anything more be required ahead of the expansion, or is that?
No, in terms of any more additional test work, we don't consider the need for that now.
Are there any questions on those on the phone?
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. The first question comes from Maurice Mason from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gents, and congratulations. My question also for Howard on the additional heating capacity. Given how well things have gone so far in quarter one with production rates, where you look on track for the 11,000 tonnes, and given that the heating capacity will be commissioned in October, do you anticipate any incremental benefit in the first few months of next year's winter as far as production goes for this year?
Maurice, I think I may have given an answer to that one already. We're actually looking for these two extra boilers to give us somewhere in the region of about 150 to 180 tons of copper once they're commissioned, and that'll be incremental based on an additional flow rate of around about 250 cubic meters an hour at a lower than average copper grade of around about 1 gram per liter.
Okay, thanks. And then one more question on the given the recent announcement by Kazakhmys on the restructuring and the fact that they have formally said they'll be disposing of Kunrat, is there any interest from Central Asian Metals in that asset? And if so, is there any engagement with the business and potentially looking at acquiring it when it might be disposed of?
That's a very interesting question. Obviously, we've kept abreast of what the news is. There are two different issues here. There's one is a local issue, operational people that we have a very good relationship with, and the other is on our corporate level. We are obviously watching with interest what will happen to Kunrat. Our current understanding is that it will be separated out into with a bunch of assets that Vladimir Kim, the ex-chairman of Kazakhmys, will take on board. That whole process is still in train, but yes, we are looking at what other means by which we might interact with the eventual owners and operators. It's not necessarily something we would look to take ownership of, but certainly we could possibly talk to people about how treatment of oxide material being currently mined in the pit could be exploited better than they currently are.
Okay, thanks. And then lastly, are you in any position to give cash cost guidance for 2015, given the tenge devaluation and where you might be going forward? Sorry, 2014.
2014. I'm looking at the back row. My Nomad sat there, and I don't think I am in a position to give that. I think the main thing about the devaluation, on the whole, that's positive. As I said when I was talking, though, it's effectively 20% reduction in. We think our cost base is about 60% Kazakh tenge denominated. But obviously what happened, I think, immediately after the evaluation, everybody thinks there's an immediate theoretical 20% reduction in your cost base. Well, it's not quite as straightforward as that. I think what happened in the country, there was most of the shops shut and everybody just put the prices up 20%. So I think it's yet to be seen what the impact will be on the cost base, to be honest with you, Maurice. And the overall, all I can really answer the question with is we will keep the costs under control as tightly as we have done historically and aim to keep them in the lowest quartile, and we'll see what the impact of the devaluation is over time, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Baitzan Koshinov from Visor Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to ask how much write-offs can be expected from your Mongolian property in 2014, because we know that in 2013 there were about 30 million write-offs. Thank you.
That's quite an easy one to answer. The question is how much further write-off on the Mongolian assets are there? Well, effectively, we've fully written down those assets, so there's nothing on the balance sheet, so there's no further write-off. The challenge for us in Mongolia now is to sell the two assets we have to sell. We've very low overheads there, running at around about, I think it's about $150,000 only per year. So there'll be minimal costs associated with Mongolia, and we would hope that during the course of the year we can bring it to a conclusion and get an active sale. And anything that we do sell them for will be upside in both cash terms and profit terms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, clear. Thanks.
Thank you. There appear to be no further questions. Please continue.
Thank you. Any other questions from the floor? Alex?
Just a question on your cash equivalents. Obviously, they're growing nicely. How are you sort of planning to manage them this year? What sort of rate of income are you generating off them? Obviously, they're an important asset.
Yeah, it's a good question, actually, Alex. Clearly, as you know, just depositing them in a bank account is not the most efficient way at the moment. So I think we'll be looking at our treasury management and trying to get a better return. We do, you know, we do hold most of our funds in dollars. We naturally hedge some of the tenge. We held over at the year end, funnily enough, we get better interest rates in Kazakhstan on dollar deposits. We had $10 million deposited in Kazakhstan at the year end, but still only of the range of, I mean, Alex is in the audience here, I think it was only about 1.75% or something of that magnitude, so it's not a great return on your money. I think the best way we can utilise our cash resources is by either, if we've nothing better to do with it, give it back to the shareholders, which is one thing we're doing, but trying to find an opportunity out there which will give a good return on the money and use the money accordingly in that sense.
Idea of what your budget for Copper Bay is?
Yeah, we invested the $3.2 million, and most of that money was against a budget to achieve a pre-feasibility study in quarter four, effectively, of this year. I think we'll actually not spend all that money. I think it's fair to say. I think we're looking at around about maybe $2.5 million on that, so there'll be money left aside. And then we'll take a view later in the year as to the feasibility of the project.
Yeah, I think the money we paid for Copper Bay was all into the ground. So there was no money going to
shareholders'
pockets. Shareholders. If there are no more questions, I'd like to thank you all for coming, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our story. And those of you on the phone, thank you for phoning in. I think that concludes the results presentation for Camel. Thank you.